Well, if you've ever seen Dateline NBC's endless series, To Catch a Predator, you know the story. A man sends sexually explicit emails or instant messages to an underage girl. That girl's actually a police officer. The man then wants to meet the girl, and when he does, he's busted. But it actually happened here in Massachusetts. Then 25-year-old Matthew Zubiel was arrested in 2006 for attempting to meet someone he thought was a 13-year-old girl. He was convicted later of attempting to, quote, disseminate harmful materials to a minor. But in February of this year, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court overturned Zubiel's conviction because at the time, the state law protecting children from those harmful materials did not include electronic communication. State lawmakers quickly worked to expand the law to include texts and emails and the internet. That law went into effect just this Monday. It faced its first challenge only 24 hours later, when on Tuesday, the Massachusetts Civil Liberties Union, as well as some book retailers and internet publishers, filed a suit in U.S. District Court claiming that the expanded child protection law effectively censors other types of constitutionally protected speech. So, listeners, here's a couple questions. Do you think it's possible to protect children from offensive material online? I mean, if your child finds a porn site, whose fault is that? And is there a risk of going too far, of making, say, racy literature or even educational materials that are online illegal? Or is the risk that we do not go far enough? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also, as always, comment online at wbur.org/Boston. Well, joining us now to talk a little bit more about the ACLU challenge and the risks and challenges of online speech regarding children, we're first joined by Richard Zuckerman. He is lead attorney who will be arguing in U.S. District Court on behalf of the Massachusetts ACLU and several bookseller groups to overturn the newly expanded child protection law. Richard Zuckerman, welcome to you. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Michael Chinman. He is a former assistant district attorney for Middlesex County and a district attorney candidate for Norfolk County. Michael Chinman, welcome to you as well.
Good afternoon.
So, Richard Zuckerman, let me begin with you and just be sure that we all understand the details of the case that led to this new law. So, Matthew Zubiel, as I mentioned, he was 25 in 2006. He essentially goes to meet who he thought was a 13-year-old girl. Turns out that girl's a police officer. But he was charged, he was arrested, and then later charged and convicted of disseminating these harmful materials. Now, help us understand why it is that in February of 2010, the Supreme Judicial Court said those harmful materials, those instant messages that were somewhat salacious or very salacious, do not fall under child protection laws in Massachusetts.
The court reached the decision for a very simple reason. The Massachusetts statute, as it was then in force, didn't include texts and emails, so that if the defendant had instead handed the material to the child in person, he clearly could have been prosecuted.
Okay, It included things like what is known as visual representations, live performances, sound recordings, or handwritten and printed materials, which the justice who wrote the decision at the SJC said instant messages are neither handwritten nor, in his opinion, printed, so therefore they weren't included in these forms of speech.
That's correct. So the legislature clearly had to respond to that. And if the legislature responded with a statute that addressed the type of conduct that was at issue there, that is, texts or emails directed to a specific person known by the defendant to be a minor or believed by the defendant to be a minor, that would have been just fine. But the legislature did more than that. The legislature did, as you said in your description of the statute, enact a statute which covered not only texts and emails, but also covers the internet generally. Mm-hmm. And that means that what the statute as enacted sweeps within its criminal prohibition postings on websites and other communications that are made not to a specific minor, but are made to the general public, but that a minor might come to view.
Okay, well, let me turn to Michael Chinman here for just a second. Do you think that it goes too far, that saying the internet in general, where children may reach out and find these websites, is that making that illegal, is that a problem?
The statute, it only changes what is printed, handwritten material, and now includes also electronic text. It's just referencing text. The statute has always applied to material on the Internet that was visual.
Okay.
So the day before the suit was filed, the statute outlawed harmful material to minors being disseminated to minors if it was visual material on the Internet. And Richard Zuckerman and the plaintiffs, they're not trying to change everything. They just want to get rid of the most recent changes to the statute that make it text messaging and instant messaging part of the statute.
Michael Chimin, I have both of you just stand by for a second because we've got to take a break here, but we're going to pick this up in just 1 minute when we come back. So Richard Zuckerman, Michael Chimin, stand by. We are talking about children, cyberspace, and the challenge of protecting kids and civil liberties when it comes to being online. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK or online as well at wbur.org/Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about whether or not you can protect children and free speech online at the same time. And we're talking about it because a new law went into effect this week that would make it illegal to disseminate obscene and sexual material to minors electronically, such as particularly in email or text messages or maybe other forms of websites. Also this week, in fact, just a day after this law was enacted, the ACLU and several other organizations filed a challenge to that lawsuit saying it tramples on constitutionally protected free speech concerning topics such as sexual health, reproduction, as well as even art and literature. What's your thought on that? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with us to discuss it is Richard Zuckerman. He is lead attorney who will be arguing in U.S. District Court on behalf of the Massachusetts ACLU and several booksellers groups who object to this new law. And we're also joined by Michael Chimin. He's former assistant district attorney for Middlesex County and currently running for DA in Norfolk County. Michael Chimin, just before the break, you had mentioned that pornographic imagery, it's always been illegal for children to be given that online. But the question is when we expand the definition to text-based things, such as email, text messages, IM, those things are going directly to particular children. I can understand that. But what about the question of the presumption or the assertion that's being made here that websites themselves say that might teach a child how to, you know, properly put on a condom, that could potentially fall under this statute as well?
Yeah, well, that really isn't being challenged here, the information about how to put on a condom, because this lawsuit doesn't challenge the definition of what is harmful to a minor. That's defined in the statute. The legislation that's challenged here just expands the definition of what is covered by the crime to include electronic text communication. So, depictions in print, in books, and books have always been thought as being one of the most highly protected forms of speech. So depictions in books of sexual information, how to put on a condom, that has been something that the crime covers, and this current lawsuit doesn't affect. And so does depictions on the internet of that material. This lawsuit doesn't affect that. It's only challenging the addition of the text matter, which now includes, in response to the Zubiel decision, computer text matter.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Chimin, but Richard Zuckerman, what do you say to that? That really people who are worried that their websites or, you know, maybe if you have a website with literature written by, you know, an author that kind of is slightly salacious, that would be targeted. But basically, Michael Chimin saying that's not the issue. That would never happen.
Well, let me read a phrase from the statute to you. It defines it uses the word matter. And it defines the word matter to include, and this is going to be a quote, any electronic communication, including but not limited to electronic mail, instant messages, text messages, and any other communication created by means of use of the internet or wireless network, unquote. And then it goes on and adds some other things. Now, if the legislator had just said, electronic communications limited to electronic mail and instant messages directed to a particular person known to be a minor, we never would have filed the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the statute is the statute has this broad expanse of language that talks about any other communication created by means of use of the Internet and then goes on from there.
I have to ask you, though, Richard Zuckerman, I mean, I looked also at for the language in the old statute as well, and it, you know, before Monday, it included things like phonographic records. So, I mean, it was old, old, old. So don't you think that at least some kind of update was definitely warranted? Because, I mean, children live online these days.
No question about it that an update was warranted. No question about it that it's difficult for legislatures to update statutes when the means of electronic communication evolve far faster than legislatures ordinarily act. But if you look at the types of communications today that can be subject to restriction, yes, you can prohibit someone from sending harmful to minors material by email to a specific person known to be a minor. Yes, you can prohibit sending that material to a person known to be a minor by instant message, but you can't prohibit posting on a website. And that's what this statute does. That's why it's unconstitutional.
Michael Chimin, go ahead.
If I could address that last point.
Yes, please.
What Richard read about the definition, he read the definition of matter. Okay, so that covers what matter is. It's not the definition of the crime. The crime is whoever disseminates to a minor any matter harmful to minors. So it's not enough that it falls into the definition of matter and it's on the Internet. There still has to be dissemination to a minor. So the part that Richard says he would have no problem with if it was included in the definition of matter, which he said if it just said to a minor, a specific person, he would have no problem with it. That element is in the crime itself. You got to go to a different statute. He's looking at the statute that has the definitions. You got to look at the crime statute, mm-hmm. which is a different section entirely, and it says whoever disseminates to a minor. It's an intentional crime.
Well, actually,
The crime statute is Section 28. The definitions follow it. It's Section 31. And the crime statute does use the phrase to a minor. But the question is, when someone posts something on a website which is accessible to the general public, including accessible to minors, can a prosecutor bring a prosecution saying you are thereby disseminating this material to a minor?
It does seem that is where the debate lies between accessibility and dissemination. But I do want to make our show accessible to a lot of our listeners who are calling in. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Listeners, really, what do you think about these challenges of protecting children from maybe salacious materials online? Can we go too far or maybe not even far enough? Julian is calling from West Roxbury. Welcome to Radio Boston, Julian.
Hi, Megha. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
To be on the air. Attorney Zuckerman, I understand where you're coming from with this lawsuit, and listening to the conversation, the initial thrust of my call has changed a little bit. I initially called because obviously I think that the legislature is sort of treading a pretty slippery slope by attempting to prevent, you know, access to material that's otherwise available on the Internet. And I can obviously see how, First Amendment rights and so on and so forth can be infringed upon. And I initially wanted to call because, you know, I wanted to hear you sound off about sort of the tension that exists between the legislature's, you know, understandable desire to prevent this material from making its way to minors, but also, the role of the parent or the role of the school district in simply, preventing the children from having private access to the Internet. And at what point in time do we sort of reach an equilibrium by saying the legislature's done its best, but now it's really the job of the parent?
Julian, that is a great question, and I want to turn it to Michael Chinman, because as a district attorney, he's been prosecuting many child protection cases for years. So, Michael Chinman, where do you draw the line between parental responsibility and where the law should step in?
Well, they're different things. Parents always have responsibility for the well-being, welfare of their children, and to protect their children. But that doesn't take away the fact that some actions by some people are criminal. And if they commit those actions, you can't pin the blame on the parent. You can't pin the blame on the victim. The blame gets pinned on the person that committed the crime.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call here. Jennifer's calling from Franklin. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. You with us? Nope, looks like we lost her. Let's move on to South Boston, where Valerie's calling from. Welcome to Radio Boston, Valerie.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on. You know, I was just going to bring up the same point as your first caller about the parental supervision. I am a school teacher in Boston, and we do have some blocks on many websites. Sometimes I'm quite disappointed because I can utilize some of those to help in my teaching. One being YouTube, for example. There's a lot of, you know, garbage on YouTube. There's also a lot of really awesome content there that would help in teaching history and science and things like that. What I do notice about my students as a middle school teacher is that I have many students that are seeing rated R movies, that are staying up late texting, that have seen just about everything you can imagine on the internet, in the movie theater, at home on cable. And it does beg the question, what are parents doing to, to prevent them from getting access to this stuff? I mean, it is really astounding.
But Valerie, let me ask you, you're saying that certain maybe YouTube videos or maybe YouTube in general is blocked at your school. Isn't that a preferable way to go than, you know, maybe prosecuting people or potentially, let's say, an innocent bookseller who's just selling books online that might be questionable to certain people? Wouldn't you rather have that than the law stepping in?
I definitely would. I definitely would. However, I have to question, and I actually don't know the answer to this. I could do a little research myself. I want to know, you know, it's not just YouTube that's blocked. There are some sites that you know, are not X-rated, that do not have, you know, profanity, that are also blocked. So I'm kind of wondering, well, who's responsible for making the decision as to what should be blocked and what shouldn't be blocked?
Mm-hmm.
So it does lead to some other questions.
Valerie,
there.
Thank you so much for your call. Richard Zuckerman, let me turn that question to you and also ask you, for example, the co-plaintiffs in the case that was brought by the Massachusetts ACLU includes the American Booksellers for Free Expression, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, the Harvard Bookstore Incorporated, and Porter Square Books. What's their concern about the expansion of this harmful material being taken to the online world?
Like many bookstores that exist in the bricks and mortar world, these bookstores also have an online presence. They either sell books online through their own websites, or they have websites that promote the stores so that people can come into the stores in person and buy books. And very often those websites will include excerpts from the books, pictures of book covers, and all of that may bring them on the wrong side of this statute, because the statute sweeps so broadly on any internet communications. So the interest of those bookstores is not to give inappropriate material to minors, but to be able to continue to sell books and to advertise books online without fear that the images or the text describing those books will come into the possession of a minor and therefore subject to criminal prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
Go
ahead, Michael. Go ahead.
You know, this is the fallacy of the lawsuit, because those bookstores in the brick-and-mortar world were not worried about what they were selling. They were not worried about minors coming in and seeing their books. They weren't worried about prosecution, and the statute existed before these changes that made text messages in electronic form included in the statute. So the people who are now saying that they are scared of being prosecuted, they weren't prosecuted before, and there's no reason to think they're going to be prosecuted now for the same behavior, even though the behavior is now in the electronic world of the internet. It's not like the internet is some special place that needs protection and immunity from all sorts of crimes, or crimes can be freely committed there where they can't be committed in the real world. It's just not true. The internet is a place where crimes can occur, and the real world is a place where crimes can occur.
Michael Chimin, let me just follow up with you on that, on one point. It wasn't clear to me whether or not it's a state law. Would it apply to internet sites with IP addresses that originate outside of Massachusetts, or is it just for sites that originate in here? And if within the state, and if it is sort of the ubiquity of the internet, which is now being targeted by this Massachusetts law, what's the feasibility in us being able to prosecute all of those billions of websites potentially out there that could fall under the purview of this new law?
Can I change the question a little bit to make it a criminal? Something we both agree is a criminal act of somebody in another state, say in Indiana, who's using text messaging to communicate with a child in Massachusetts, and is text messaging matter that would violate the statute.
Okay. So that would violate because it's direct.
A child in Massachusetts, so the statute would apply to that. The difficulty in prosecuting is going to be for the Massachusetts authorities to get the Indiana person to prosecute them. It takes a lot of resources, and that's
okay.
Not something commonly done.
It just wasn't clear to me. We have got one more caller here. I'd love to get her on the show. It's Jennifer again from Franklin. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jennifer.
Great. Thank you. I just wanted to share an experience that I had had. I have, obviously, a 15-year-old daughter who had a cell phone, and she had received a very graphic, pornographic text that was a photograph, unsolicited. She was very bewildered by it. I approached the police about it, and they said there's really not much they can do. This, again, I would not want this type of picture ever sent to my cell phone, minor or not. And besides that issue, just on the side note, Google also, I've had a problem with searching that. The Google, when I spoke to their offices and their business department, they cannot control the thumbnails. So the thumbnails, when doing a search just on specifically tobacco for a school report, brought up a hardcore pornography thumbnail. And when I had questioned it, said, what kind of filters can I put on my computer? I'd like my kids to use Google. How do I get to the point that they're not able to see these things? They said they don't control thumbnails. They cannot control thumbnails, but once you click on them, you can't get a bigger picture, but you can get the small thumbnail.
Jennifer, thank you so much for that. Michael Chinman, I mean, we're hearing from parents today who are saying, I don't know how to be the police at home to control what my children are able to see on the internet. Do you have any advice for them?
I think there's plenty of resources for monitoring web use and putting on blocks and stuff, but on the question of crimes, we got to stop blaming the victim and blaming the parents for criminal offenders' crimes. I mean, this woman who just spoke, she clearly is a concerned parent.
Mm-hmm.
She can't be monitoring her daughter's phone at all times, and her daughter got a picture that clearly any parent would be upset about their child receiving. So you got to stop this mentality of blaming the victim and blaming the parents, which is, I got to say, it's true in every child abuse case. There always is a theme of why didn't the parent, not the offender. I'm not talking about the one who raped the child. I'm talking about the mother who had a relationship with the person who raped the child. Why didn't she do more?
Michael Chinman, I hope it doesn't sound like we here at Radio Boston are blaming the parents. That's not our intent at all. It's just in raising these questions that Jennifer, she herself, our caller, said, "It's I want to be the first line of defense at home, but even that in and of itself is very difficult." We've just got a minute to go here, though. Richard Zuckerman, I want to throw the last question to you. The internet is a rapidly changing place. Every single moment of every single day, there's something new. How is it ever that the law can catch up to a degree where we are protecting children but not violating civil liberties in your mind?
Here, the legislature could have done it very simply because they had a very specific issue to address, which is to address emails and text communications directed to a specific person and not address the internet generally. And if the legislature responds to this lawsuit by amending the statute to limit it in that way, we will be absolutely delighted.
Well, that's sorry, Mr. Zuckerman, we are now officially out of time, and I do apologize for cutting you off, but that is Richard Zuckerman. He's the lead attorney who will be arguing in U.S. District Court on behalf of the Massachusetts ACLU and several booksellers groups. Mr. Zuckerman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Michael Chinman, he's former DA for Middlesex County and also running now for being DA of Norfolk County. He's prosecuted child protection cases for years in Massachusetts. Michael Chinman, real pleasure to have you as well.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it.
Well, coming up, we hear about the World Cup final, the death of George Steinbrenner, and other topics in our weekly sports roundup with WBUR's Bill Littlefield. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.